Thank you.
So let's repeat for the stream. Today I'm going to tell you a little bit about the site evideo.bg and how it was born and how we made it possible. The title of this talk is Scaling to 12K Live Streams, and 12K you will understand from where it comes. So first of all, who am I? I'm Vladimir. I'm mostly a sysadmin, DevOps and security guys. I like, play and do automation and some tooling. I do some architecture and everything that gets thrown my side. I work for the company Information Services. The company itself is the national integrator for the Republic of Bulgaria. We have different kinds of services. We are EIDAS qualified. We are also a member of Euritas. We have platform as a service, regular infrastructure services, on-premise, cloud, everything. We also do SOC as a service for the public institutions in Bulgaria. Some of our major projects are in healthcare, transportation, financial and judiciary branches of the government. The problem that we have, there is a legislation, and the legislation says any and all ballot counting processes and activities should be recorded, streamed and archived in real time. And the requirements for that simple question, that simple problem are, first of all, there is a legislation, and the legislation says just live streaming should be done, recording, filling of the forms, counting of the ballots, basically the whole process that starts when the poll closes. The recordings should be available online, the recording should be archived, and it's absolutely mandatory with several small exceptions, and the exceptions are mainly for specific settings, like for example elder care facilities, medical facilities, jail facilities and similar. Basically where there is a sensitive context, we are not doing any monitoring, but it's mandated in the law itself. The law came into force in February, a little bit less than 2 months before the next election. The whole system had to be designed, deployed, created, operated in that short time. The devices that are provided are going to be operated by the polling station chairman, at least that's defined in the law. The people operating it are usually not really trained, and there is no bonuses, rewards, but also no penalties if something doesn't happen right. Which basically means untrained personnel, uncertain conditions, the only thing that we can control is the device itself. The scope. We have close to 12,000 polling stations in Bulgaria. All will be streaming, or at least all should be streaming. They start mostly simultaneously. They stream for 2 to 6 hours on average on the election day itself. And those were the things that were known from the start. On top of that, we added some more of the requirements. We want a really nice audio channel, so you can hear the audio, which is usually quite important. We also wanted to do a parallel recording on local storage, so we have a backup in case there is no connectivity. And as I said, this needed to be live and operational in less than 2 months. The solution, pretty simple, nothing strange, nothing ordinary, just the scale and the timing were a bit problematic. So, first of all, we need a camera. Mobile phone will do, in fact. The mobile phone, it might sound strange to some people, but otherwise it's a very fully featured device. It has a built-in UPS in the form of a battery. has usually a decent camera that you can use as a monitor. It has microphones. If you don't know, the microphones in recent phones are really nice, really good, really crisp. They also come sometimes with an array of microphones. The mobile phone itself has multiple connectivity options, including wired via USB-C, for example. More and more devices have hardware accelerated codecs, so it's easier to do this in hardware than to write the software and peg the CPU to the top. They're usually pretty simple to handle. Almost anybody can handle a phone. He usually does, any day of the week. The mobile phones have a very, very well accepted solution for remote management in the form of mobile device management software. And additionally, we slapped a little bit of RFID tags and QR codes, so it's easier to asset manage them. The devices that we chose, they were based on Android Go. The Android version was 13. And they were quite inexpensive, in fact. And if we go back to the previous requirement that this should be live in 2 months, try to find 12,000 phones with a lead time of less than 30 days. I really challenge you. It's not a pleasant task. The other pieces of the puzzle that we are using is mobile application, of course. We need to do some kind of streaming. So we developed in-house application that's doing this. We are not using anything fancy, just off-the-shelf libraries and our custom logic. The application itself needs to do the recording too. The application itself needs to be configurable by some remote means. We chose to do this via the MDM. We decided to specify QR code as a means of initial configuration, starting, stopping, streaming, and other tasks. The QR codes themselves are encrypted, and so the data is mostly secure. If you have enough time, of course, probably you could break it, but you usually have the QR code for something like 24 hours before it needs to be used, so we're relatively sure that it can be broken in that time. Of course, the applications need to evolve. We're constantly improving them. We've recently added health monitoring. The application itself monitors the phone, the state of everything that's happening, the audio, the positioning, the orientation. We've added much more logging since the initial implementation. What I forgot to mention, the system has been already used for 4 different major elections. No, 3, sorry. 3 major elections that are covering the whole country. Several smaller elections that are happening due to certain conditions. One of the major elections was a combined election for a parliament and the European Parliament. So I think it was pretty well tested. Better encoding profiles were chosen, so in order to lower a bit the CPU usage and the temperature, the performance has been improved. All in all, we're developing it because, yeah, why not? It's good to be developed. We also need a mobile device management solution. We found and picked one that's open source. It provides the vector for monitoring and logging of the devices themselves. It supports different profiles, but that's usually all of them do. It stores the configuration. It supports messaging. It's asynchronous. So it doesn't block on all the devices calling to it. And if it needs to push information the other way, it also happens asynchronously. We can also do via the MDM forced updates and other different tasks. The MDM itself allows us to lock down the device itself, so it's not so the user cannot easily break it. Of course, excluding dropping the phone itself on the floor. Some results. We have run already 8 different elections, as I said, both combined, both single, small, large. The graphs that you see on the top, it's just statistics of using the website that's hosted the results. The bottom picture is a screenshot from our internal control plane. Top row is listing the active sections that have been active for the election itself. The bottom row is the currently active ones. For the public reception of the system itself, at least we want to think that's very nice, but it enforced stricter process controls. There are more than 50 official complaints in the court for which the sole basis, well, not the sole basis, but the main basis is the video monitoring that we're doing. There is already one of the cases has reached a final judgment and conviction. Many of the cases are still in investigation, and more or less constantly new cases are coming. So all in all, I can say that the system has increased the voter engagement and the public engagement in the process itself. The pictures that you're seeing are, the top one is from the already finished court case that has reached judgment. The bottom one is again from a very possible manipulation of the process itself. That's also being investigated. Of course, you cannot do such a system without testing, and of course, I guarantee you the testing will not be enough. We did quite a lot of testing, and then some more, and then again some more. We were doing testing in the development process on a freshly provisioned environment, on a stale environment, in a clean state. In the polling places, we also did some testing. We did performance testing in tuning to iron out some details. And I guarantee you, when you deploy a system in the world, all the testing will not save you, because the world can throw at you very different stuff that will break you. And now we come to the infrastructure. That's the basic stuff that we're going to need. So the calculations are relatively simple. 12K inbound streams, megabit and a half for each, total of 80 gigabits inbound. Outbound, uncertain. We have seen several thousand online viewers, but that's frankly said not the thing that we are monitoring due to the way the infrastructure is deployed. You need 20 to 40 terabytes of storage space for the recordings of a single election cycle, at least for the big ones. You need sufficient connectivity to all Bulgarian telco providers, because as we already know, we are using just a phone, and the phone needs to be able to talk to its mothership. We are not using Wi-Fi, we are using 4G for the connectivity. From the infrastructure itself, we do require quite nice performance, especially on the storage side. We decided that we want to use, let's call it like this, a large scale or largely scaled infrastructure, and for that we needed a relatively well established provider. We need to do quick scale outs because frankly we can provision the infrastructure preemptively, but there is not a real point to do that. The later you do it, if you do it in the cloud as we do, the less money you will pay. We needed quite a good support, at least mostly in terms of networking, troubleshooting and security. We required multiple locations so we can easily fail over. And of course, security and DDoS protections are a must for this kind of world we live in. And so, the components. If you cannot tell from the picture, we chose GCP. The components are relatively simple. We have a control plane that's running on the compute engine on the bottom. We have a cloud SQL in the form of Postgres. That's our DB layer. We have a video on demand that's passing mostly through cloud services. The storage is on persistent disks. We use a shared cache, Redis in fact. We have an ingest and restrain clusters that are again running on top of compute engine. And then we're using the firewall options that GCP provides us. Probably the first interesting node is the ingest node. We tried running with MotRTMP, and then we settled on MediaMTX. Our main goal usually is to try to use as much open source software as possible and to contribute back whatever we can. In our case, for the application server, we're using Nginx and OpenResty. For RTMP ingestion, we're using MediaMTX now. Before, we were using MotRTMP. And for processing control and some communication, we're using Redis Celery and FFmpeg. The Restreamer node is extremely simple. Nginx and OpenResty serving static files, even though they are HOS generated, it's absolutely fine. Basically, we're streaming HOS. The protection of the assets themselves, so not to allow easy way to DDoS ourselves, is done in a layered approach. We're doing caching on the HOS chunks in memory for improved performance and to lower the node from the ingest nodes. The control plane is in-house developed, mainly in PHP. It handles internal eventing, provisioning of the elections themselves, provisioning of polling places, the phones, controls, who goes where, who can stream what keys should be used, and so on. Basically, that's the thing that is making the process possible. The other things around it are just talking to it, getting data, and doing its bidding. The last part of the process is the data retrieval, because as you remember, we have also a local recording, and sometimes there could be no online recording because there is no connectivity, any kind of connectivity. The data retrieval itself is super simple. Unpack the phone, plug it to a USB-C, an application written in OpenPascal, right? Pascal, yeah. Application written in Pascal just downloads whatever is needed from there. Quite simple rules. Again, we have a very involved processing chain that's mostly concerned with making absolutely sure that the files are good, right, and proper. If there are broken files, we try to automatically fix them. If not, they go to broken and somebody have to fix them manually. And the files needs to be arranged somehow in a file structure. There are a lot of manual checks, a lot of process of manual processes, and that's the reason why we have RFIDs. If you have 12,000 devices in a single room, go find number 42. If you don't have RFID, it's a total mess. If you have RFID, it's again mess, but not total. Just takes a little time. Other interesting pieces of the puzzle or things that we learned, don't reinvent the wheel. Try to use platform services if you are using cloud stuff. Do test, do automate, and always have a very good backup plan. Implement pre-flight checks. If possible, automate them, run them twice, and then get somebody to look over them manually. What we used, Google Cloud Services, Ansible, Terraform to stand up the infrastructure, Cloudflare for DNS and some light caching. And that's it. Google Cloud Platform, the GCP provides us very nice services in the form of firewall, caching, and global distribution of assets. And if you have such a use case, it's quite nice. Of course, there are issues, as always. The provisioning of the devices is manual. The upgrade itself is, again, manual. Some things can be automated, but most no. If you start too many devices at a single point of time, all the telco providers will be very happy with you. And you can see phones calling to the base station for miles and miles and miles away in a city environment, which is not really nice. Even though we do training videos, we print materials that are used during the process themselves, the people don't use them, don't read them, forget them, turn the phones upside down. That's one of the reasons why we implemented self-monitoring of device positioning. If the device is not positioned properly, it will talk back to you. And the first time you hear this, it's quite scary. People really like the devices. The package that we ship is a phone stand and instructions. The stands are some Chinese brand, and they require very deep technical knowledge how to operate them. Sorry, that's literally true. They require technical knowledge. On the process of downloading the files from the phones, choose quality cables. That will save you a lot of grief. Choose RFID stickers with nice antennas. We can recommend the UHF ones, not the NFC ones. And that's mostly it. What next? We have 120 terabytes of videos in Bulgarian. That are some options that we thought about. I don't know if you can think something else. Talk to us. We'll try to make some deal to get to you that data. For example, yesterday I saw that the VOC guys are trying to do live transcriptions with AI. Maybe we can try that too. Questions? The QR code leads to a feedback page. That's my email address. Go for questions. Yes?
For how long do you have to keep the videos, and do you have to keep them available for people for the whole time, or can you move them to cloud storage after some time?
So the question was, how long should we keep the, have to keep the artifacts, basically the streams and the recordings from the device itself. The law does not strictly define that. If you want, I can try to find the line in the law that started the whole process, and it's less than two sentences. Okay. Next. Yes.
I didn't follow how RFID helped you out when you have 12,000 devices in one room.
How RFID helps with too many devices. So if you're searching for a device, and it's in a big pile of other devices, the RFID helps you to narrow down where exactly to look. The phones, we pack them in boxes, large boxes, 60 phones per box, in their own box. So basically, you have a stack, and then, okay, this is in this box, pull it out in this section of the box, and start taking out the device. The other way around is pull every phone and read the barcode with the unique number on it. Okay, next. Yes.
You mentioned that you had some backup plans. If something goes wrong, then you need to use the alternative solution, or
so the question was backup plans, what kind of backup plans, right? Okay, so first backup plan, local recording. Second backup plan, keep the live recordings on the cloud instances for some amount of time on top of that. Third backup plan, keep the recordings in a bucket, because streaming from a bucket is a kind of a requirement for the CDN service that we use. And then after you download everything down on the on a local storage and check everything, after that delete everything. And yes, we had to use that. Yes.
Two more quick questions. One, so there's no penalties if someone doesn't turn the phone on? Because there was something on the one of the first slides. The second question, so they have what 27 or 20 to 40 terabytes of data. How do the democracy activists watch it? You have 50 court cases. Did they close themselves in a room for 1 month?
Yes. Okay, so first question. Sorry, I forgot the first question. Penalties, yes. The first question was, what happens if there are no penalties? Well, there are no penalties, nothing. People can not turn the phone, can break it, can do whatever they want. I think that that will be changing shortly, though. The second question was, how do the democracy activists watch this? In at least what we know is two ways. The first way is a bot downloads everything. There is one specific person that we know is doing this. The second option is there is the polling places, there is statistics where there are suspected forgeries, fraudulences, and so on. And those are the most monitored. Usually that happens by an organization that says, okay, we need 50 people. You are going to monitor this X amount of stations. Otherwise, as we said, 20 to 40 terabytes of video, that's roughly 7.5 to 8 years per election cycle. So single person, it's hard. Otherwise, we found out that people mostly watch the polling places around them to see how the process works. And there are a lot of people that are doing that, and just jumping through the video, and some things get captured just by chance. Okay, there was another question.
Yeah, do you have any indication that other countries want to adopt this, or exactly the opposite?
I'm not sure. I have talked with some Polish guys. During my work, not specifically on that project, they were telling me that something like this was thought about in Poland, but was not accepted. Otherwise, no, sorry, I don't have information.
A couple of words about storage. Did you use something ST-compatible or just huge file share where each node?
Huge file share, not gonna work. IO-wise, won't work. We used local persistent disks, and after that we offload them to GCS, and from GCS we get them down. The devices, the phones themselves do RTMP, and then to the outside world we do HLS. Any and all restreamers can reach any and all ingest nodes, so doesn't really matter where you hit it. Estimation about the whole project, not sure. Okay, let's try to do a simple estimation. Okay, 5 to 10 million, maybe. I don't know. It really depends on.
5 euro in million plus the hardware that was needed to be installed. And every elections after this is much cheaper than because it's enough. We don't need to buy another devices or develop another software.
Okay, so let's repeat it for the stream itself. About 2.5 million euro plus the devices cost. The costs are very high upfront because development, testing, and so on and so on. But after that, running it for each and every cycle, it's much more cheaper. Up until you need to replace the devices. The devices themselves, the Android phones, were something like 100 euro? 60. 60? Four. I'm completely out of numbers. Yeah. So 60 odd euro per device. So the devices themselves were even not that expensive, but that was one of the reasons why we were looking for such. Okay, do we have a time for another question? Okay, so go.
On the devices, did you notice any issues with batteries falling? Because I would expect that's going to happen after a few years.
The question is, did we notice any battery related issues? Up until now, not really. We found during the unpacking and downloading the device data, we found several phones that were quite hot because they were left on. We had a total failure rate of less than half a percent, maybe even less, something like less than 50 devices have failed, and some of those have failed by being repeatedly hit or fallen on rocks or something like that. Basically physically dead. Otherwise, no, not really. But you have to have in mind that those devices are not actively used and abused.
Well, that's what I would expect to be the problem, because you know, when you keep a charge battery in a storage and don't use it, and it usually swells, and you know.
I'm not so good at batteries, so I don't really know how batteries behave.
I recommend r/.
Okay, we'll check. Anyone else?
We have a lot of elections in Bulgaria, so there is no time to
Anyone else? Yeah, sure. How do we manage the inventory? Thank God for the RFID. Otherwise, the inventory management is built into the control plane. It has an inventory module. It's nothing too fancy, nothing too special. Probably, if the person is asking about physically managing the inventory, that's another question. It's not so easy. But 12,000 phones are not such an extreme volume. It's something like 8 to 10 cubic meters.
Next time you show your phone.
Yeah, sorry, we didn't took a photo of this. But on the next cycle, I promise I will have a photo. Anyone else? Okay.
You mentioned you didn't use Wi-Fi, you used 4G. Did you have some issue with mobile operators? I mean, some problem with 4G connectivity in some places?
Well, okay, so the question is, did we have any connectivity issues, specifically with 4G?
Yeah.
Do you know how many different labs company sites there are that are claiming best network in something? A lot of, well, there are at least three, because each and every telco provider is using different one, and everyone is saying that we have the best network. That said, on the first cycle, there were some issues that on the second cycle got corrected. What the operators themselves, the telcos themselves are doing, I don't know. But probably they are doing either prioritization or just physically moving cell towers. At least some years ago, I know that each and every telco provider had at least 12 mobile cells to deployment, either due to demand or brokerage. Okay, anybody else? Then, thank you.